Welcome to Season 6 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest on the podcast is Matt Ulorski. Matt is a movement coach from Southern California who works with a myriad of athletes from a number of different sporting backgrounds to help them better understand how to move their body in the best way for their given sport. Matt has some great insight into just how important correct movement, breathwork, mobility, and flexibility are to performing at your peak in your given activity. In this episode, we go over Matt's personal history, his philosophy on coaching, the types of training athletes should be doing to improve their range of motion, and he squashes a few long-held myths about flexibility and strength. There's a lot to cover, so let's get to it. All right, so we're back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. We are now live. I usually start these podcasts, Matt, by saying a phrase, green light means we are live, but Zoom has recently done an update, like you would have just heard, where the lady tells you that you're recording. It throws me off every time. It's like my mental tick to start the podcast. And so I'm not too happy with Zoom. But anyway, today on the podcast, we have a very special guest. We have Mr. Matt Ulorski. Apologies if I mispronounce that. But Matt is a fitness coach, a self-renowned fitness coach, and probably one of the most interesting Instagram profiles I've found in the last 6 months. I was originally put onto Matt from one of my very, very, very high-level athletes. He sent me your profile and he said, if you're serious about movement, if you're serious about getting the best out of your performance, you've got to follow this guy. It's insane. And I've been following your journey for probably the last year, probably about 6 months, I'd say. And man, absolutely incredible. And I'm very, very fortunate and thankful to have you on the podcast. So Matt, welcome to the Fight Science Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it, man. It's a pleasure.
Let's start. I don't generally like going with this question because I think there's far more interesting things we can talk about, but particularly for you, I think you have such an interesting background that it would be a shame not to go over this. And let's talk about this. Can you tell us about yourself, how you got into this space, what you describe yourself as to your clients? How did this all begin?
Okay. So let's just go back kind of what we were talking about to childhood. So typical kid with ADHD, not so good in school, but gifted kind of athletically, loved every sport. So I kind of did it all, played it all. Because of that, I like others got injured a lot, hurt a lot. And as I got a little older into life, those things started really interfering with what I love to do every day. Going into my 20s, I got into mixed martial arts. And didn't go as planned, but fell in love with it. Still love being athletic and wanting to help people and fix myself generally. I started going to school and learning about the body. Originally, I wanted to do physical therapy because I really wanted to help fix others. For me, it was pain was the biggest, I think, influencer. It was just I had a lot of it and I wanted out of it. And I wasn't getting that from trainers, physical therapists I was working for. So I was like, I'm gonna try this on my own. Maybe I can fix myself. That was kind of the journey. And then moving forward into college, someone's like, why don't you start training people? Like you love to coach, you're learning this shit. And so that was kind of what I did. I started trying it. And then, I got my certification, the PT certification, kind of just dove headfirst into that, had a really good mentor, fortunately. And just dove into that. And I really initially, like I said, is I wanted to work with children athletes because one, they're really moldable then. And from being a formal athlete, having a lot of bad coaching. I saw that not only is my potential probably wasn't fulfilled, but I had a lot of injuries and stuff. And I just thought if I could be the coach, these kids, that I wish I had, these kids could have, I thought I could really make a big impact somehow. And that was kind of like my, what do you want to do with life? What do you want to impact the world with? And I was like, let's see if I can help these kids. I'm not fully there, but I am in a career that I love. And I get to help people move better, feel better, no matter what that is. You want to power lift better? I can help you with that. You want to do the splits? I can help you with that. You want to punch better? You need the mobility for that? I can help you with that. So kind of the gist of, you know, what I do and what got me here in the short.
Yeah, it's incredible. Hey, we're talking about this offline, and I was in a very similar boat when I was coming through, especially in my high school years when I was younger. Looking back on it now, I appreciate everyone has 20/20 vision in hindsight, but just thinking I probably wasn't surrounded by the best coaches. And what could have happened in your athletic career if you, say, had people like yourself around that could guide you and send you down a different pathway? And it's interesting, hey, and I think that's what brings a lot of people to this field, is that, you know what, maybe I didn't have the best coaching, and I want to ensure that that doesn't happen to other people.
Absolutely. I'd say more times than not, the more coaches, at least they come from an athletic background, because not all of them do, but a good amount do. And the ones, especially at the higher level, it's like, yeah, it's the same consensus. It's just like, fuck, if I had me with the knowledge I have now, of course, hindsight, but I can't do anything about that, but I can help others with that. Right. So that's kind of like the motivation for what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Matt, let's talk about your philosophy when it comes to movement. Like we were saying before, it's very hard to pigeonhole you into a hole. Like, what is it exactly that we do? Like, it's really all encompassing, right? Can you tell us and describe to us, what is your philosophy when it comes to movement?
Absolutely. I kind of actually do pride myself on my philosophy, because I like it to be very simplistic. I mean, it, on a deeper level, it means a lot more, but for the people listening, is movement's really simple, right? And this applies to any type of training, whatever it is. If it's movement involved, right? Move where you need to move. Okay. Move there often and really get strong as fuck as you can in these positions. So it's like, that's it. That's it in short. So no matter what your thing is, your sport, whatever it may be, I mean, those are kind of like the ideology behind it. You know, how is that person moving now? Do they have the ranges of motion they need for to meet the demands? Can they tolerate the forces that their sport or activity is putting on their body? And it's, if you just keep it like that, it's very simple. You know, do you have what you need to do the things you want to do? Yes or no? No? Well, let's give them to you. And if they are outside of my means, I have a network of fucking assassin ninja people way smarter and more qualified to me that I will pass my client to or work with, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm going to get someone moving better.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And Matt, let's talk about, let's say if someone comes to you and they say, I message you and I go, Matt, you know what? I want to do jujitsu, or I want to do boxing. I want to be a marathon runner. I want to do gymnastics, whatever it is. And then I message you, or I can come see you. What's your process that you start? How do you start this entire process? How's it all begin?
Absolutely. So of course, assessment, that's the key thing, right? Assess, test, reassess, retest, and kind of plan program from there. So yeah, if I can, of course, I want to physically put hands on and assess you. Fortunately, there is quite a bit of things we can do to assess somebody online, but that's going to be the first thing I'm going to do is, okay, what are the things you need to do? What do you at least subjectively know that you're not able to do, or at least is hard for you? And then let's do some objective testing. You know, let's look at ranges of motion you need, test, you know, your tolerance to load, and kind of plan from there. You know, and of course, online, that's kind of as far as it can go. It's just like, let's express what you can now, and then prescribe what you need to get you better at those things or give you more of. In person, it can dive pretty deep. The first thing I'm always going to look at is how someone breathes, how well they can breathe. And I don't just mean taking the breath in and out, but the body's ability to put air where it is designed to put air, right? Into our back, into our chest cavity, you know, the whole rib cage, 360 degrees. That's the main thing for me. That's where it starts, because if that rib cage is messed up, the body just not functioning at its best. And breath really is the biggest influencer on the autonomic system, you know, chemistry, gas exchange in the body, it all comes back to breath. So we start with the breath. From there, we can get more into the joint specific stuff. If we have discrepancies, we have pain, you know, we can look at the joints objectively. And then we have movement screening, depending on the person in front of me, I can have them perform exercise A, whatever. And it's kind of a collective of all that. And then, you know, of course, with the breathing, if I see something, I test, they're positive for a test, I can give them an exercise. And if that clears a test, we can move forward. But I use a collective of different systems. There's just depending on the individual that's in front of me.
Yeah. You spoke about this point before, Matt, and I've read it a lot with your post and the information you put out. You talk about moving within the range of motion that's required by the sport. What do you mean by that?
So for a perfect example, there are some coaches and trainers out there, especially like athletic ones, that get stuck in the realm of working more in our mid ranges. I think most people probably commonly work in mid ranges in just their everyday training. Well, sport life isn't just mid range, right? And where injuries take place is typically at our end ranges. We're weakest, we're more susceptible. So if you look at something like a goalie, just it's extreme, but it's easy because we know they're flexible. A goalie has to have a shit ton of hip internal rotation. A goalie needs to be able to do the splits. You know, these are things, if I have a goalie in front of me and he can't get into a pancake position or do the splits, and now that's extreme to 99% of the population, for a goalie, this is the bare minimum. Like, you can't be a goalie if you can't get your legs straight across to the floor. It's unacceptable. So it, depending on the sport, right? What is that sport? What is the physical demands? You know, let's take American football, same thing. Yeah, they're running a lot, they're cutting. I know for a lot of their training, it's a lot of this deceleration stuff. But I go back to, well, what position are you being put in? What range of motion is your body being forced into where you're getting injured? ACL injuries, most of them are happening when that hip is going internally rotated, the knee's driving in, and then the ACL gives out. Every football player I've ever assessed has like zero internal rotation of the hip. So that's kind of just like, that's how I look at any sport. Okay, what is this demand of this sport? You know, how does the athlete have to move? And then if I have the athlete in front of me, I can assess them and say, well, do they even have the capacity to tolerate the stuff that they're doing every day? Yes or no. If they don't, then we got to give them what they need.
Would you say, Matt, that this discrepancy that you're finding amongst all of these sports, is that due to this more traditional strength conditioning environment or programs that a lot of coaches will kind of give? Like in most sports, I feel like you're going to go and do a base program where you're just doing, say, bench, squat, deadlifts, and building that foundation.
You're powerlifting, right? You're a jiu-jitsu guy powerlifting for jiu-jitsu. You're a surfer powerlifting for surfing. These aren't powerlifting sports yet. The bench, deadlift, and squat is like, that's the go-to, bro. That has the biggest carryover, says every bro. And I'm like, well, show me the data. Like, I want to see data that my squat is going to get me better at shooting on a double on someone and taking them down. I want to see a bench press get me better at surfing a 20-foot wave. Like, I just, it doesn't make sense. It's old school mentality. I say that's a yes and no. Yes, there's definitely patternizing movements that I think are not necessarily, I don't want to use the word dysfunctional, but aren't ideal for the athlete, right? Because let's face it, sports aren't good for our body. These are man-made things. Like, we're meant to throw a spear a couple times a day. We know we're meant to run, climb shit, but we weren't meant to throw a baseball 2,000 times a day. Like, you know, so sports in itself aren't good for you. And that's why I'm so big on like trying to maintain your normality, like the balance between your athlete and your human that's behind that athlete. So yes, that traditional lifting, I think, definitely plays a part in certain things, especially if a person does have, like, you know, pelvis that's just jacked up and they're squatting heavy every day. You're just going to create more compensation and dysfunction, and it's a whole pattern. But the other side of it too is the sports create a lot of patternizing dysfunctional movements for the body. Makes you a good athlete, but not so much a good human. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So say if we're talking about jiu-jitsu, I think BJJ is a good example. Lots of fighters will listen to this and most of them would be doing jiu-jitsu. And I see it all the time, like at our jiu-jitsu gym, they're the three big ones that everyone does, is like squats, deadlift, and bench. And that, I've often thought that, and it's like, I can kind of see it, but if you develop that foundational strength, how's this getting me any better at, you know, escaping a triangle or ripping on an armbar or whatever, you know what I mean? What type of programs or what are you doing with jiu-jitsu athletes, say if someone comes to you and say they've got that good foundation and they want to optimize, what type of things are you doing with them?
So jiu-jitsu is my favorite because a lot of what I like to do is like positional training, right? So very, very positional specific, joint specific. And I don't think there's any sport on the planet that's more about position and joint angles, right? So, and that goes for attacking, escaping, whatever it may be. I think that it's shocking how bad the mobility is in most jiu-jitsu players. They may be good on the one side of the triangle. And this was something, a conversation I had with somebody, it's very high level. And I told them, I assessed them, and I said, imagine if you had the same hip external rotation on your right hip. Imagine your triangle. No. And he knew I was a striker, like primarily. So he goes, you know how you have orthodox and you have, so this is my left side for jiu-jitsu is like my regular stance. And I said, I understand that, right? But if you think about it, you have really no movement here, which means you don't have information being relayed, you know, to the brain. If you had that information, because you could actually move there, you would probably go for triangles on the right side. Or if you saw one, you would go. It's just another option. It's like having another hand now. If you can only triangle on your left, because that hip can only go that way, imagine if you opened up that other hip. Now you have another weapon. But it's a hard grasp, unfortunately, for jiu-jitsu players to understand the importance of joint-specific training and then positional. So yeah, we can do all the curls we want, and that does help us, you know, try to fight off a Kimura or an armbar, right? What I find is, though, can I mimic that position? So I'll set up, say, a band. I'll get myself into the position where I'd probably be fighting the most force with someone trying to break my grip. And I would do isometric contractions there, because this is going to get as specific as I possibly could to challenging the actual tissues in a real life scenario in jiu-jitsu. Because in jiu-jitsu, I'm going to be in that position. I'm going to be fighting here. So now if I can get a band and do that same thing, that's going to mimic more the environment that jiu-jitsu actually is going to have. Is instead of like, well, if I do a bicep curl, it's working that muscle, it'll help my grip. It's still not quite specific enough. And I think that is extremely important. And then once again, having the mobility, you can have all the flexibility in the world. You know, those guys that love their rubber guard. Imagine if you could do rubber guard with just your leg. You could just bring your hip. And I know dudes that have that kind of active flexibility where they could just take their leg and bring it to their head. You know, so I try to really get that point across. It just think of it this way. If we do less of the benching, the deadlifting and stuff for what you think is strength, and we actually strengthen the joints and the muscles at their end ranges where jiu-jitsu happens, you know, it's happening in these shortened or lengthened positions, get stronger there. That might give you a millisecond more to get out and not get injured, you know, get stronger there. And you might be able to get that submission, you know? So it's joint specific, position specific, and end range strength training. That's like my primary things for like jits players and kind of all sports.
Matt, what would that look like? Say if there's a training program, and like anyone that does jiu-jitsu will appreciate there's thousands and thousands of different moves, right? But is it more a case that, okay, there's particular patterns within the certain joints that you can train, and then you can put that in together for a program, rather than say sitting in a triangle position for 4 minutes and then doing that type of training? How do you go about that?
So I'm definitely working on that right now. That's kind of my low hanging fruit, but the thing in the works. I want to develop a program that I can put out there for people that's a little bit more general, but I know it will be more specific to the sport than most shit we see. So, but if I'm programming it for someone, once again, it's going to go back to obviously their wants, but then what I'm objectively finding their needs are, you know, so it's going to always come back to their goals and then the assessment, my findings. You know, I think for me, the findings should be the biggest dictator of how I plan or program. But, you know, athletes are very stubborn. So it's a little harder, especially jiu-jitsu athletes. It's not easy to tell someone, including myself, take off the time. You actually need that to recover. If you ever want this elbow to be better, dude, you can't keep getting it cranked every day. Like, but yeah, for the programming, it's going to be very specific to the individual. I don't like to give general programming, which is why it's so hard for me to come out with the program I can offer to the mass, which I'm going to. And even that's going to still have some customized, you know, qualities to it. But yeah, it's, I wish I could just say it's this, and that, but it's really going to be, you know, based off of what I find, I'm going to obviously suggest that we start working on, if you do have big range of motion discrepancies, once again, my main thought is always, yes, performance, but to get better, I have to be more consistent. I got to spend more time doing this thing. Injury is going to be the number one thing that's going to stop me from doing that. So then injury mitigation is kind of my main goal. If I see you that your shoulder IR is barely past regular, right, and you can't get to here, I know that you have no chance against a Kimura, you know, and you're susceptible to that. And that's your highest risk. I'm going to prescribe whatever movement and exercises you need to get that joint back to a normal joint. So that's kind of the jits of it.
You touched on it before, Matt, about the flexibility versus mobility. And this is for someone outside of the area. It's a confusing topic, right? And I'm sure for you, you hear this all the time. And it's probably one of those things I feel like I get asked questions in nutrition where you probably roll your eyes, and this is probably one of them for you. It's a confusing topic for a lot of people, right? So can you kind of clear it up? Flexibility versus mobility. What's important? What's not? Is there one that's more important, or what's the go with it?
So let's just start with this. Yes, I love this because this realization was huge for me. There's a lot of stuff being coined, certain names. Like people will call something mobility, right? This is mobility training, or this is a mobility exercise. But they're being coined, right? So I say, let's just look at like what the literature defines this as, and then kind of go from there. If we look at mobility, there's this big kind of fad now that mobility is just active flexibility, and then flexibility is passive, like this whole thing. First off, mobility is just all your motor abilities, right? Your biomotor abilities, your main ones. So strength, flexibility, endurance, speed, power, that makes up your mobility, your ability to move. So mobility is just being able to freely move. That's all that is, right? Flexibility is one of those motor abilities. Flexibility, though, has four different main types. This is where the big confusion comes in, why stretching gets blasphemy, why people think flexibility training is just stretching. Flexibility training really is strength training. It's a lot of the stuff that I'm saying, this end range, just joint specific, but you have your static passive, right? You have your static active. You have your static dynamic and active dynamic. These are different types of expressions of flexibility. So it's not just passive, but with this popularity or growing popularity of mobility and these things being coined, people are often getting confused. They think, well, mobility is this active flexibility, and flexibility alone is just passive. And that's not the case. Active mobility would be active flexibility, right? Anything you do, any movement you do is always going to be an expression of flexibility. So strength training is a form of flexibility. Anything you do that's movement is a form of flexibility. Now, far as what people are calling mobility training, the ones that I would say, yeah, that's going to improve your mobility, it's flexibility training being done right. It's just been coined something else for the sake of, I would say, probably selling your system, selling your program. Great system. I use the system that in particular that does this. I've been to all their seminars. But the reality is I'm going to call it what it is. If I'm doing a certain type of movement, I'm not going to give it a coined name. I'm going to say this is a dynamic, static, whatever, stretch or whatever it may be. Because I don't want to keep confusing the people. Like you said, the outsiders, it's like, well, what's mobility? Look, man, mobility is just anything that's going to improve the quality of your movement of the joint, of said joint. You know, and it's not just one thing. There's not one exercise that's just going to give me better shoulder mobility. It's going to be a cumulative of different things. So in short, yeah, mobility training done right is just good flexibility training done right. I mean, cut and dry. That's what it
is. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And would you say, Matt, that it's a similar concept to what you were talking about before, that it needs to be individual and athlete specific and within the range of motion of what is necessary for the sport?
Absolutely. You know, there's along with both of them, we'll keep using flexibility and mobility together, because there is a lot of the same misconceptions. You know, people go, oh, that mobility training, that's an extreme, stretchy, get you all bendy, because some of these coaches are very good movers. The way we move, the way the IR I have in my hip, that's not good. You don't want that much. You don't need that. And I don't want my people to have it. If I express it, I'm expressing. Context is only so much on Instagram, but the point is, our goal is just to give you the flexibility, you the mobility you need for your reality, your life, your activities, your sports. You don't need to ever do the splits if your life never requires you to do the splits, right? But there's this misconception that that's kind of like what all of this is. No, man, it's about giving you what you need. Just meet the physical demands of the activity in sports or your lifestyle. Like whatever it is you got to do, do you have enough range of motion and enough capacity, you know, tolerance to load within that range of motion? It's really that simple. At the core of it, it's that simple.
So is there benefit, Matt? Say, let's go back to our theoretical jiu-jitsu friend we keep talking about. And let's just say he's been training for a bit and he goes, yeah, you know what, man, I'm struggling. Like say someone stacks me and I feel tight and whatever. Is it worthwhile then for him to actively do a stretching program to improve that? Or is it more of a case that he just needs to get his body used to being put in those positions? Or is it a combination of both?
So this is that's a good question, because this is a tricky area and I go back and forth. The concerned coach in me would say that no, don't force yourself into a position with external load. Be able to internally take yourself into there first. The better your internal environment is, the better you can handle external load, right? So if I can't just contract a muscle somewhere, I'm not going to put a shit ton of weight so that I can feel it, because what you're doing now is you're actually challenging more of the mechanical tension, right? Or it's a building mechanical strength, because you can't even contract that muscle, but you're putting it so much weight that it's at its breaking point. So you can feel it actually contracting now. And that's kind of where it gets a little iffy with certain things. If you're having a hard time getting stacked, right? That's a spine that doesn't flex very well, right? And you need it to flex in jiu-jitsu. My thing would be, number one, breathing, because spinal flexion and the spine, ribs, all that comes back to breathing. And then spine mobility. You know, how much do you actually work on segmenting your spine and loading? I have posts of me actually loading myself in a inverted position, like someone stacked on me with weight, and doing isometrics, and then also just breathing there, learning to get my nervous system comfortable with this area. Because if my body's scared, it's going to tense up more. And the more tense we get in certain positions, you know, injuries can arise from that. So it's get your nervous system comfortable in these positions. That's why I said move where you need to move. Bro, if you suck at going inverted and that shit hurts, you need to spend more time there. But you don't want to do it with somebody stacked on you all the time and forcing you there. Because, well, as you know, the body doesn't adapt that way. It doesn't. The force is our language, right, to ourselves. But if you try to work against your nervous system, that hard stop where it says, no, you're not going any further. Yes. And I know there's some of my flexibility friends will say, like, I do loaded stretching to bring, that's fine. I'm all for loaded stretching too, in ranges I already have strength in. But if I'm trying to gain new range of motion, right, if I'm trying to get more inverted where it's not hurting or it's not uncomfortable, that's a new range of motion. I'm going to do that with gravity probably first. Gravity and breathing, let the nervous system, let the body start adapting to that. And then progressive overload. Any type of training should be based around principles, right? You know, tissue adaptation, said principles, and progressive overload. That's kind of like the foundation to any training, man, should revolve around that. That's just how our biology works. So load it, start to load it more and more and more until you're at a point in which you have enough capacity and elasticity to do the things you want to do.
Yeah, that's an excellent answer. And it made me think of a couple of posts that I've seen from you. And one that's pretty funny, that where you talk about when you see the guy that's holding the stretch longer than 30 seconds. Can you talk to us about that? What is the importance of holding those stretches out? Because you know it, I know it, I've done it before, where you just go and you count in your head, get your stopwatch out, and you go, okay, 30, next one, let's go, let's get this done as fast as we can. What's the importance of holding those stretches?
I think, and I use 30 because that goes back to the childhood athlete. We never held shit past 30 seconds. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 on. So I look, I've used this before. I was on my buddy, Dan, Flexibility Research, his podcast. You want to get somebody about flexibility, have him on your podcast. He knows more than anybody I've ever met. So time under tension, right? That's another thing. If we go back to principles of adaptation, right? Because that's all training is. It's adaptation. Strength is adapting. So flexibility is no different. If I want my body to be comfortable in this greater range, I need to get the nervous system to feel safe. The nervous system is, I like, this is my analogy. It's like an overprotective parent. Okay. If I've never done the splits before and I try to do the splits and I'm not genetically gifted with flexibility, like very rare people are, my nervous system is going to give me a hard stop. Maybe it's a muscle that pulls, maybe it's a cramp. But the nervous system is going to try to stop us because it doesn't feel comfortable and it doesn't feel that you have the ability to do that. So time under tension is how we get our nervous system to go, okay, I'm going to grant you a little bit more. That's why we use anesthesia. Because if they want to put my arm behind over here to do the surgery, you can't do it to a woke body. But with a nervous system shut down, they can bend you and do all these different things. So people need to understand that when you can't move somewhere, there is mechanical tension restrictions, but a lot of the time it's neurological. And you're not going to get your nervous system to just go, oh yeah, no problem, without spending time there. So back to that, 30 seconds. 30 seconds was kind of like, at one point, there's some research that says it's kind of a minimum. You can see some kind of change if you spend it. But if we look at the collective of research and data, 2 minutes is kind of the sweet spot where we start to see the nervous system give us an inch. 3-4 minutes, even better. Upwards to 8 minutes, 2 to 8 minutes is where they see the greatest amount of change and lasting change, because I can give someone 30, 40, 50 degrees of range of motion in a session by doing some stuff, altering the way they're breathing even. But now I have to give them things to reinforce and keep that, which means at the end of the day, it's just time under tension, time under tension. So you have to spend the time there, and 30 seconds is not shit. It is not enough time for your body to change for the long run. You know, you may feel a little better in 30 seconds, but I promise you, you're doing nothing lasting. So that's kind of that meme was just like, it came to me because it's very rarely that I see someone, but as someone that worked in a gym for almost a decade, I look at people and I kind of look at my watch and I'd be like, see if he holds it past 30 seconds. And it never failed. It was like right at 30 seconds, boom, to the next thing, and the same people that understand that, like, you couldn't just lift weights once a month or a couple times a week, whatever, and expect to really see anything. You have to spend time under all that load. Flexibility is no different. The biology, the same principles, the same rules apply to all of our tissue. It's just a matter of what's the input. Is it strength? Is it speed? Is it flexibility? It's all the same shit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to use this opportunity, and I don't like doing this on the podcast, but I'm going to do it. But I wouldn't say it was an argument. I would say it was an educated debate with a friend of mine who's a physiotherapist. And we were talking about this very topic, and we were talking and they were saying, stretching, and I'm a big advocate of stretching. I think if I don't stretch mentally, physically, I just don't feel great. And they were saying it's a waste of time, right? Because the force that is necessary to change those tissues is way greater than what you can apply, which is gravity in your body. And my argument to them was, maybe that is true, but I'm no expert, by no means I'm an expert, but my interpretation with my body is that you're changing the proprioception, right? It's not so much about changing the mechanical tissue of, you're changing what your body is comfortable neurologically letting you doing and how long you could sit there. Who's right? Are we both right? Are we kind of right? What's happening there?
So, I would say you guys are both right. To your friend, I would say, if you think of stretching as only something you do with gravity and stuff, once again, that's someone that doesn't understand true flexibility training. Most people don't. I'll tell you that it's a small niche of us coaches. And I say small, and I could say of all the things I know, this is probably one of the things. Flexibility training done right is just strength training, but it's a focus of end range, short range. It's end range strength training, essentially, right? And then taking things through full ranges of motion, right? And a lot of PTs, doctors they know stretching as do the butterfly stretch, do that stretch. So in their mind, they can argue like, well, that's not making architectural changes. Actually wrong. There are studies. Like I said, get my buddy Dan on here. He's got all the research in the world. They've seen architectural changes, right? From stretching, right? Not even loaded stretching, but spending all that time under tension, that there was change in the tissue, lasting change. Kids that sit cross-legged their whole life typically have way better external rotation. I sat within like a W most of my life. So my internal rotation was stupidly good. Your body's going to adapt to the things you do. And if you do it a lot, yeah. And like you said too, is the neurological side of it is just getting your body comfortable there. You say, oh, it's a waste of time. Well, that's great. The guy that tells me it's a waste of time is typically the guy that can't touch his own fucking toes. I hate to say it. I've never heard somebody that actually moves well tell me that stretching or flexibility or mobility is a waste of time. I've never. no one's dropped down in the splits and said, dude, flexibility is bullshit. So that's kind of like to if I don't feel like arguing, that's what I'll pose. That's great. You don't move like someone that I'm going to take advice about on movement, you know? But yeah, he's not wrong, but it's, you know, stretching is more than that. That would kind of be the answer. It's like, well, that, and then for your side of it is, yeah, man, if you're just spending time in those stretches, look, if you're doing things that spending time in those tissues shorten and they feel tight, well, if you go and you spend time in the lengthened position, it's probably going to feel good for you. And I say this, unless you're stretching for hypermobility, like yogis and stuff, and I love you yogis or whatever like that, but if you're just doing traditional yoga, it's not good. I can show you some of the top yogis in LA. We're the mecca here. They've had 1, 2, 3 hip replacements galore because there's all the hypermobility, right? Because just passively stretch, right? And that's not good. But if you're strength training, you're running, you're moving, you better be fucking stretching. What are you doing to counter all that stuff? Because unfortunately, we're not our primal selves. Even if you're an athlete like us, I run or bike every day, I jiu-jitsu, I weightlift. That's still not enough. I still sit way more than my ancient man would have. So unfortunately, I put myself in really shortened positions, shitty positions a lot throughout the day that I need a counter. I need to stretch. I need to do flexibility work to counter that, especially because I do things like jiu-jitsu and stuff that puts me in really uncomfortable positions, right? So you have to combat life gravity alone every day. So yeah, to dismiss flexibility or stretching, it's bonkers. It's still so divided in this community of fitness that like some say stretch and even most of them really don't know much about stretching or only have this one idea about it. And then the other half's like, fuck it, you don't need it. Just strength train, just do the thing. Okay. Will you show me when injury rates come down, I will stop doing all these other things. But as long as my guys' injury rate goes down, their performance goes up, their quality of life, if they're just a general populace person, goes up, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing because results are all that matter to me. I don't give a shit what system you use, brother. It's just get the results, right?
I was going to say, this sounds very similar to nutrition, right? Like, I feel like it's just two sides of the same coin. Like you're either landing on heads and tails, but ultimately it's a coin that we're playing with, right?
Absolutely. I'm, you know, not now, but if I can get you on mine sometime, man, I've been wanting to get a nutritionist. So I'd love to dive down because that's one I dove into for a while, but then I just like, I'm going to get out of here because I don't care quite enough to really learn. And there's just too much of, it's too black and white. There's no gray area. I don't know. This is good now. This is bad now. I mean, I understand it with exercise and it's very easy for me to explain to someone when they go, is this bad or good? I can explain to them and let them critically think and decide for themselves. But with nutrition, I'm like, I know basis of it, but you know, one day this is good for you. The next, this is not. So
yeah, changes like your underwear. But anyway, man, I'm very mindful of your time. Very last question that I want to ask you. Say someone's listening to this and they're like me right now. I've just spoken to you and I'm going, man, this has pumped me up. I'm fired up. I want to take this more seriously. What's the best place to start? Just if people are listening at home, what's the best place for someone to start taking control of their flexibility, mobility, strength, and flexibility, whatever we want to call it? What's the best place for them to start?
I say, do your best to educate yourself on just kind of like what is expected out of the normal human body? Like what kind of movement should I naturally have? And then take that with what you need for the things you do and then kind of assess yourself. Like, where's my biggest restrictions, you know, and just go after what stands out most to you. Spend more time in the position. If you need to be more flexible on your legs, you know, spend more time on the floor with your legs opened up. I mean, it's that simple. Just start putting yourself in positions you need to be more comfortable being in because your life needs them. You know, like I said, if someone wants to just learn to do the splits for the sake of it, great. You know, there's a million ways to start that. But if you're just looking at improving your overall well-being, your movement, move more, right? Go on more walks, get on the bike more, just move your body more. Movement is how we communicate to our body. So move more and spend more time in uncomfortable positions that you need to be in.
Man, that is awesome. And Matt, I can't thank you enough for taking the time coming on. That's so, so, so useful. I'm sure so many people will get so much out of that. And for the people who are listening and follow along with the podcast, you guys know that every now and then I get on a coach and we kind of let out a bit of a secret within the team that have really helped, you know, some of our high level athletes get a lot better. And Matt is one of those coaches that have helped a few of our guys really take it to the next level. So thank me in advance when you guys listen to this and you start putting this into practice, because you will get huge, huge benefits, because I've seen it in action with our guys at the highest level. And Matt, if people are listening to this and they go, you know what, I want to tap into that, I want to get some coaching from Matt, I want to follow Matt on social media, best places for them to find you, best way for them to get in contact with you.
Absolutely. So right now it's just Instagram. I'm rebuilding myself. So Instagram, website's being built right now. Programs are being built. So Mindset for Movement, the number 4. You can DM me. My email is in my link tree there. You can send me an email and just go from there, man. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me while all this other stuff's being built up.
Awesome. That's awesome, Matt. Man, thank you so much for coming on. There's so much good information there, but man, I appreciate it so much. And no doubt I'll get you on again very soon and we'll go over everything again.
Awesome, man. I love it. I love it. And same for you. Try to get you on mine as well when you got some time, brother.
Absolutely. All right, bro. Until next time.
All right, Jordan. Have a good one, man.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Matt is part of a new age movement and performance where specificity is being taken to another level. Not only do you need to move well, but you need to move functionally within the demands of your sport. I highly encourage you to follow him on socials to stay up to date with his work. His podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.